Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the end of the series of Tubes and Wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Holy mother of Christ, throw up a spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning, everybody!
What the hootie who happened on Walking Dead? Oh my God. I mean, now we're talking the episode, and if you haven't watched it, it's your own fault. We put the spoiler warning out. I'm talking one where Shane got cacked. Oh my sweet Jesus. I didn't see that one coming. First of all, When I don't get to watch Walking Dead the day it comes out. So I spend most of the friggin' next 2 days not looking for spoilers. And the closest I got was somebody back home said, "Oh, poor Shane, strike two strikes." And I said, "Spoilers, don't say nothing." I had no idea that's what she was talking about. So I missed the original episode, and then Monday, sometime iPod will put it up, takes me approximately 9 hours to download it for some reason. I don't know. And this is high speed internet at the hotel.
High speed being a relative term.
I've got to watch it because every 24 hours, my internet stops and I have to re-register that I'm a guest. And so you can see what's happening. 10 friggin' minutes from getting the download and all of a sudden everything freezes. And so it doesn't say, it doesn't give you warning. It just quits. And so the only way I can figure it out is by opening a new window, and then it will come up and say, "You have to re-register." So what iPads does, or iStore does, is very conveniently corrupts the whole file. So the last 8 hours and 15 minutes were for nothing. So I got to erase that, start all over with another 9 hour download. I didn't get to watch it till Tuesday. I finished downloading it Tuesday. I watched it Wednesday. Oh my God. Every time I watch Walking Dead, I have weird dreams the next night. I haven't had zombie dreams, but I might be being chased by tornadoes. I might be, having a desperate run across country trying to get somewhere. I am so friggin' glad I watched it in the middle of the afternoon because it took me about 3-4 hours to calm down. part of me wanted Shane to pull through. I grew up in the 70s. A lot of the shows I watched, including like the original Battlestar Galactica, were basically buddy-buddy flicks. Two guys, be them cops, be them, running from the Cylons. They were buddies. That's how Battlestar Galactica, the first one, essentially is. It's just a 70s buddy flick. So I'm always looking for that. I'm always thinking, Rick could have made it a little more clear. I need you with me. I can't do it without you. Blah, blah, blah. But oh my God, I did not see that coming. And it should have stared me in the face because I was looking, I was watching Rick walk through the woods staring at Shane going, okay, what is going on? What does he know that I don't know? Oh, Jesus.
Well, and the other thing about it was I still remember the episode where they went to the prison to drop off their prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And how on the way back it's, everybody thought that because Rick saved him, oh, things are fine now. No, they went out of their way to make Shane seem extra spooky on that car ride home.
And
if you've read the comic, you know that he's not long for this world.
And my wife picked up on it.
He doesn't even make it out of the first volume of the trades.
And as I went and, I'm desperately now looking for the boards that I can now talk to. And, of course, there are like, thousands of, posts in, and they're already arguing about something else. I read a few interviews, like when the actor was on David Letterman, and he said he was told, basically everybody who auditioned tried for Rick, including the actor. And I'm embarrassed I don't have his name on the top of my head, even though he lives like probably within 10 miles of me, where I'm at. And he said that when he read for Rick, and then he thought, you know, I'd like to do Shane. And they said, well, you know, Shane's not going to last too long. So he knew, the actor knew going into it that he wasn't going to last. I think he, you know, and first of all, they didn't realize Walking Dead was even going to go beyond the first season. I mean, it was 6 episodes. It was a big hit. 13 for the second. The next 13 already, you know, committed to. So, you know, and he kind of liked that. And so he went into it knowing that. And the episode that took place where they, you know, it finally finished was, they said all the other actors, with the exception of the one who played Dale, because he had passed away and he was already gone. He couldn't come back. They all hung out in the woods and watched this. And you're talking, you know, all night long, you know, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., trying to get it done before the light comes up. And everybody's freezing, watching them do this final scene. The next day, when they were doing some other scene that the actor who played Shane wasn't involved, he hung out in the woods watching them. But he didn't stay to say goodbye. He just took off because he'd said his goodbyes the night before.
Yeah.
So, and he's already, I guess, in another series or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that was one of the
spoilers.
That was one of the spoilers that I knew because Frank Darabont, the guy who worked on Walking Dead, brought it to TV, then got fired by AMC this year, has already cast him in another pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I already knew that Shane was doomed, not just from the comic, but from that, because I was reading, you know, what kind of shows are coming on, what's being renewed, what's going away. It was, oh, cool, Frank Darabont's doing one called L.A. Noire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at the cast. Oh, well.
Oh, that's too bad.
I guess Shane's done this season.
Wow. That's too bad. I hate spoilers like that. You know, there's days where, you know, we talk about pro wrestling a lot, you know, and it also has something to do with our guest coming up. But, you know, I often wonder that there's been like 2 things that have happened that have caught me by surprise. When I don't see it coming, I just love it. I mean, and that's why I'm geeking so hard on, and this will be my geek for the week, Walking Dead, because you just don't see it coming. And in wrestling, it was like when Eric Bischoff came out to be the general manager of Raw, no idea it was coming.
And the beautiful thing about that one was they didn't just keep it a secret from all the news sites and everything, including our favorite one, PWInsider.com.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, they don't post our episodes like they said they would.
Nah,
but
that's okay.
We forgive Mike.
Still love them.
I forgive Mikey. They weren't able to get it. And from what I heard, most of the wrestlers didn't know.
Yeah.
They kept it a secret from the wrestlers and most of the people working backstage. They just said, we're going to bring out the new general manager during this segment. So there was a lot of shock. And afterward, there was a lot of talking to the troops because Eric Bischoff, there were a lot of people there who didn't much like him. He didn't like how he'd run WCW, or he'd screwed them over or said pretty nasty things about him. And Vince McMahon kind of said, nope, you're working with him now.
Yeah, and he was there as a performer. He wasn't there as any type of power.
Right.
So, but, you know, the other one that got me more recently is when CM Punk returned. You know, he had the quick storyline was he legitimately, his contract was up in the WWE, did not resign. And everybody was wondering, you know, well, usually when somebody doesn't resign, you know, you lose or you don't win the championship, depending on what the match was. He won and he walked out the crowd with the belt, and which is like major taboo in wrestling. He showed up at like Comic-Con, he went to ball games, he was all over the place. You know, everybody's like, what is going on with CM Punk? Will he ever show up again? Is he going to show up in TNA, whatever? And he, what was it, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, he showed back up. It was at the end of a big convoluted thing. They're reappointing a brand new WWE champion. John Cena just won it. He's got the belt in his hand. All of a sudden, the music hits. And I think you knew, Corey, because you watched Ring of Honor. You knew the music.
Yes.
I didn't. I was watching with Holly, my youngest, and Punk come out, and we both were like, ah! And it was awesome. I mean, I was like, I couldn't wait to see next week. And, of course, they fumbled the ball. But that's a different subject. I love stuff like that. And the other thing weird about Walking Dead now, and I had to point that out to my wife because she's like, I don't get it. Why did that guy get up and walk away? And why did Shane get up? And I don't normally give her spoilers that I know from the comic book, you know, because, you know, the big one last season was when I saw the barn on Herschel's property, I knew there were walkers in it.
Yes.
Didn't know Sophia was in it, but that's a different one. But I told her, I said, this will get lost because of the horde or whatever now going to attack Herschel's farm. But what the deal is they have it in them. When you die, you come back as a zombie. You don't have to get, if you get bit, it kills you and then you come back. But if you just die anyways, you're going to come back as a zombie. And that's something in the comic, I believe. I'm going to be like, a year behind on the comic before I even catch up. I mean, I've got like the last six issues sitting there and I'm on the road for the next 6 weeks or, you know, several weeks. So,
the thing about it is when, the writer Robert Kirkman pitches the story, he did it when he sold it to Image and then he did it again when he sold it to TV. He said, this is what happens after the George Romero movies end. The Romero movies, like Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, those are about civilization falling. This is about how to survive in that world afterward. And in the Romero movies, when you die, you come back. It's not like modern zombie movies where it's spread via a virus, and once you're bit, in the Romero movies, they had it in Night of the Living Dead. And the way they explained it was when somebody's dead, they've got all sorts of diseases. The human mouth is one of the most disease-ridden things on the planet. And dead people have even more disgusting things that will kill you. So that's how people died. Now, they've hinted at this. Remember also that episode where they went to the prison and they saw the bodies and were, they're zombies, but I don't see any bites or scratches or anything. So they've been hinting at it. One thing that Kirkman said, a lot of people said, well, wait a minute. We've seen the bodies in the cars in the first episode of the season, and you know, they were just dead bodies. So he said that they made sure for all of the bodies that were in the cars, they showed some sort of head trauma.
Very subtle.
Yes. So he's been building it all season.
Yeah, it's going to.
But enough about TV.
Yeah, I'm sure next week I'll be, you know, gobbling and blathering all over my keyboard. Yeah.
First off, believe it or not, this here radio show has sponsors, ladies and gentlemen. Sponsors!
Cool.
Unlike Rush Limbaugh, none of our sponsors have left us.
True.
Isn't that amazing? Even after the cricket palooza of last week, none of our sponsors left, Joe. You didn't drive them off.
No, a good joke is good worth the crickets. Everybody's worried about the crickets. I keep telling them, you know, eventually Corey's going to wake up hungry one night in the morning, especially these goofy overnights, and you're going to go, the little cream-filled kind, crunch, and they're going to be gone.
I spend my night, I spend my days protecting them from my cat. So the crickets are as big a part of the show as you are. Matter of fact, there are times I think they should replace you.
You'd probably get more said.
But this here radio show has a sponsor, and that sponsor is DreamHost.com. You need a website.
I do.
Yes.
I'm nothing without a website.
You've got the MySpaces and the Twitters and the Pinterests and the MyTribe and... They don't have Friendster anymore because they shut down, and they actually emailed everybody who had a Friendster account to say, hey, we're shutting down. You might want to come get your stuff.
Yeah, some clouds just disappear.
People said, Friendster? Did I have that? If you have dreamhost.com, you can set up your own website. And it'll be there as long as you continue to pay the price every year.
And what's that
any
price?
Any website you want. You can have any domain name you want as long as it's not already taken.
So lousyratbastard.com is off my list.
Cricketpalooza. If you want Cricketpalooza as a website, you can have it. And if you go to the site and you sign up and you use the code CRAZY, you save $20 on your first year. And we're about to get into Tales from the Shop.
We are.
Yes, Tales from the Shop is brought to us by BroomhildaMusic.com. Chris B., the fine singer-songwriter who runs Broomhilda Music. You can go to that website. She just moved out to Oregon. She's getting all set up, so sign up for her mailing list. And she will email you as to gigs she's doing. She's going to be announcing those within the next few weeks, is what she says. But you can also buy her new CD, It Was You. You can buy
it. It
was me? No, It Was You is the name of the CD.
Oh, I thought it had something to do with sheep. That would be bad.
See, there are the crickets again.
Just worried about them.
You can buy it via iTunes, or you can get a physical copy of a CD. Believe it or not, they still make those. And she'll autograph it and everything.
Neat.
So she also has done the theme for Tales from the Shop right here. And the thing is, our Tales from the Shop is not Tales from your shop.
Nope.
It's not Tales from a shop I worked at.
Never.
It's Tales from Kevin Smith's shop.
Well, we'll get to him because, you know, I actually got to visit a couple comic shops since last we talked. And one of them, I think I'll probably actually visit more than once. It's called Rogue Comics. It's up in Cranford, New Jersey, just north of me. It's kind of neat because both the comic shops I visited to are like north and south. So if like one sells out, I can go to the other one. It's open 7 days a week, which is nice. And it reminded me of a miniature Hot Comics. I mean, if you were to take the big store and cram it down into the small shop, and it probably is what my store would have turned into. You know how we talked about like the wall of Star Wars figures. I'd probably have a wall of the Marvel figures, you know, the little tiny ones and the Marvel Select figures and the DC figures. I mean, it was just full of that. And my brain was just like, oh, this is fun. Nice rack filled out with new comics. So I was able to pick up stuff and I went a little crazy. I picked up Avengers. I picked up Fantastic Four. I picked up Hulk. I picked up Green Lantern. Picked up another Spider-Man. You know, I haven't read nothing yet. I'll take a quick divergence here just to talk about back home. Avengers, what was the new Avenger book that came out? Avengers Assembled?
Oh, yes.
Number
just
one.
Started.
That has a store-specific variant cover if your store decided to do it. Remember, I think it was Spider-Man 666 that had it. And I know Nick at the Source got one. So if you're interested in picking one up, give the Source a call. They actually had somebody with the Spider-Man one call them and bought like 10 or 20 copies. And my guess is this is the guy on eBay that for $4,000 got you one of every single store in America that actually bought into the variant cover, which I thought was neat if I happened to have $4,000. But because, you know, the thing was, there must be a list somewhere saying every store that's done it. So if you're interested in one, give Nick a call. I called him last Wednesday, and they're going to put one in my hold box. So, but Rogue Comics, like I said, fantastic store, Cranford, New Jersey. A lot of fun, friendly guy, good, you know, modern back issues, a smattering of old stuff. And, you know, he has a wall, too, of current comics. So I was able to go back and pick up some that I missed. So just a fun store. Another place that, you know, I think he's got more stock than store, because there were some places where I wanted to look closer, but he's got stuff stacked in front of it. And you're trying to think, is this new stuff he's waiting for, or just stuff that's there because, you know, I don't know if it was the owner in the store or not. I just, you know, I was there to pick up comic books. I mean, by Gumby, I did.
By Gumby.
In the meantime, I did, this is probably a good place to mention, SpringCon Comic Book Celebration, coming up May 19th and 20th, 2012, 10 to 5 p.m. both days at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. 100,000 square feet plus of comic book action, 225 guests, marketplace dealers from all over sector 2814. Huge.
That's Earth, by the way.
Huge charity art.
For those of you who aren't watching the new Green Lantern animated series.
Extensive guest creators. Costume contests, 500 door prizes up front, free creator autographs, fabulous food, and
let's not overpraise the food, shall we?
Well, if you're a meat eater, it's fabulous.
It's state fair food, so you can, sure, you know,
love state.
Everything's fair. Deep fried.
With my luck, I'm going to miss the state fair, as well as I will be missing SpringCon. So it's your chance to get there and be crazy free. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
We're here to talk about the war.
The war.
Oh, sorry. Wrong song.
Oh, it's coming.
Never mind.
It's,
go on.
Hey, just downstream from me in Red Bank, New Jersey is one of, I don't know if it's an actual must see. I mean, a place that every comic guy probably wants to get to. And of course, I'm talking.
Strip club.
Kevin Smith's comic book shop, Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, Red Bank, New Jersey. Red Bank's a little bit south of where I'm hanging at. And to get there, I ended up taking I guess they call it the New Jersey Transit. It's just train. Gets me down there, electric train. About a 40-minute ride. And what struck me as odd when I took the ride is that, you know, I'm thinking it's like, you know, Minnesota, the cities, once you get outside the town, it's like, you know, you get a couple miles out and there's some farms, and then you get to the next town and there's some more farms, and you get to the next town. We're talking, this is a major metropolitan area for such a place. Minneapolis, St. Paul's got a lot of farmland really, really close to the cities. But what struck me is that while I was taking the train is that it just seemed like it was one endless neighborhood. House after house after house, and it changed. You know, the farther I got away, the trash got less and less, or a little bit higher quality. The
higher quality trash.
The houses suddenly all sprouted pools in them. The lots got bigger. You passed a couple impressive abandoned factories. And anyways, I took the trip to Red Bank, and Red Bank itself is a nice little town. It's got a number of different things in there. One of the cooler things is, I think it's Count Basie Theater. And I may take a trip down there this Sunday as we record. They have a guy doing a show, One Man Star Wars. But they also have things like the Summer of Love 2, the Monmouth Civic Choir. You know, it's a very active theater. A lot of cute shops, boutiques, you know, it's a pretty happening place. It's a lot of fun. So I got there, and spotting Jay and Bob's Secret Stash is fairly easy because, first of all, the street looks a lot like what you've probably seen in Dogma and maybe Chasing Amy.
Or the TV show.
And yeah.
Comic Book Men.
And, of course, it's right next to the Surf Taco, so it's very easy to spot.
Tacos.
And of course, you can hardly miss Jane, Silent Bob in a big circle right above it. as you look at the store, a nice friendly sign on it says, I assure you, we're open, along with a Mallrats poster. So, so that was pretty cool. Now, if you're going to the store for comics, it's just a comic shop. It's got new comics. It's got back issues. You know, so as a comic store itself, I didn't find anything really special. You know, so you're talking where, you know, Kevin Smith talked about the shop isn't doing as much business. You know, I had the same feeling there that I did when I originally saw Hot Comics. I mean, I could do so much more with this place, just in terms of comics. But that's not what I was there for. Oddly enough, and I'll talk about what I left with, I didn't really pick up a lot of new comics. First of all, I showed up on a Sunday, and, you know, it was like a week, you know, Wednesday to Sunday. They sold a lot of stuff, so that was cool. But as you go into it, you start noticing the different View Askew Universe paraphernalia. The big thing was they had the big circle that said Brody's on it, from Brody's Comics.
Yeah.
From Mallrats. So that's there. They have most of the artwork, and I think it was Mallrats that they had in the beginning, the credits, everything was as a comic book. All the characters appeared. So he's got a lot of that art on the wall. He's got the last page of the Chasing Amy comic, which was in the actual movie. That's posted. So that was a lot of fun. You got to see the table where they do all the podcasting. Movie is there, the big cow. On the wall, there's the original Silent Bob costume. You also find a couple costumes from Clerks 2, the movie's outfit. And I can't remember the actress's name, what she was wearing when she was there. And, of course, the highlight of the trip was visiting the original. Jesus.
Oh!
He was there.
Buddy Jesus.
Buddy Jesus was there.
He's your buddy, Jesus.
And he pointed at me, winked, and gave me the thumbs up. I got a picture of it. All these pictures I've got on my Facebook page, and I will post them to the official Crazy Comic page so you too can get a direct affirmation from Buddy Jesus.
Now, one of the things about the show is that there are never any customers in the shop, ever.
Oh, I found out.
Unless it's somebody coming in to sell something, or they'll have somebody kind of wandering around from time to time. But for the most part, it's the four employees, and I guess one of them isn't really an employee, just kind of hanging out and talking.
I will tell you one thing. There was a couple things when I looked up online. You know, you look up where the store is in relation, and it's like about a 10-minute walk from the light rail station. So you get to walk down some of the prettier parts of Red Bank. And on the way back, you know, I visited a couple places. There was one place I wanted to go into because I was really, really hungry. It was a cafe, but it was called No Joe's Cafe. I couldn't go.
No Joe's.
I was very disappointed. Fortunately,
I'm sorry you couldn't go.
Couldn't go. Fortunately, down the block, they did have a place called Broadway Diner, which is one of those probably greasy spoon places where all the waitresses call you sweetie. It's great. But what I did is I Googled it, and then I saw some reviews, and one guy was saying he was upset because on January 27th, he went down to pick up some X-23 comic books. I'm quoting him as if, you know, that was the day to buy X-23. Anyway,
well, it was.
He was told.
After that, X-23, it was gone.
Unless he was on.
She joined the Avengers, so none of her comics mattered.
He couldn't get in the shop. So when you're looking at the shop or the show and there's nobody wandering around, that's because they're not letting people in the store unless you're on the list. And the people on the list were probably the random guy in the background and somebody bringing in, you know, whatever
stuff to sell.
Collectible of the week. Yeah. And there's one guy who was talking about that. You know, he said, yeah, I brought blah, 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 and they were interested and they told me to come back and they put it on tape. So, you know, It's as real as any other reality show out there.
Which I've kind of mentioned. The other thing is that they've had at least two episodes where they talked about how they just, oh, the sales are really bad. And they had the one where they did the zombie sale and their total sales for the day were like $30. Joe, how real is that now that you've been there?
Well, when I was there, now, first thing I did before I went down is I called him and I said, you know, I just saw online somebody said that when you're filming Comic Shop Man that you can't get in. He said, no, we're done for the season. Oh, great. He was real friendly, told me the hours, came down. When I was there, there were a lot of people walking around. Now, it was a nice day out. It was sunny, a little bit cool, but, you know, 58, cold in New Jersey. Heat wave for Minnesota guys. So
there, it was a day where it got to 55 and I went out and had to do a few things and I stopped at a place for lunch. I was the only one there not in shorts.
Well,
and Lord knows no one wants to see me in shorts.
Yeah, I mean, I've agreed with that. I would give my eye teeth to have the traffic they had on a Sunday. Now, I don't know if it was just because, and you know what? The people that were there to see the comic shop. There was a kid dragged, it had to be his mom or his aunt. I didn't catch which, but he's like, oh man, there's Buddy Christ. Oh, hey, look, there's this. I don't think the mom had a clue what the kid was doing. Or maybe she did and she was just more low keyed about it. You know, everybody that was there was pretty much there because it was Kevin Smith's shop. At least the few that I saw, you know, you couldn't get in the back issues. I mean, I looked a few and they had the same thing. They're all new, nothing old, a few old stuff on the wall, nothing major. And it just, you know, it just, like I said, for the comics, meh, but for the Kevin Smith stuff, it was cool. There wasn't as much paraphernalia as you would have thought that he might have. You know, you're thinking, oh, Kevin, so he's got to have some really cool things. Well, he's got the Mallrat book. I did see a movies uniform shirt, which, you know, it's $55, and if I had anywhere to wear it, I probably would have. I still may go back and get it. I just don't know. You know, for a guy who wears a uniform at work and when I'm off, I just wear whatever, you know, is clean, you know, $55 on a shirt I might never wear again. You know, if I had my comic store, my comic store, I'd probably do it. But that was a lot of money. A lot of t-shirts. A lot of bumper stickers. I picked up a couple. One I'm going to give to our good buddy, David Watkins. You know, Banky Edwards going, what's a Nubian?
There you go.
And one I got for you, Corey. That kid is back on the escalator again. He did have replica art of the Chasing Amy page, which I thought about buying, but I couldn't quite figure out. It's a nice print. I couldn't figure out how the heck I would get it home in one piece.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have the movie plastic cups, you know, in case somebody wanted to grab my junk. And, you know, I was kind of surprised. They had all of his books, all of his comics. Matter of fact, one of the things I bought, and even though I have a copy of it, I bought it anyways. Kevin autographed a ton of copies of Batman. How do you say it?
Cacophony.
Thank you. And they were both autographed by Kevin Smith and Walter Flanagan. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, so they either ordered tons of them or whatever, and they had them at cover price. I figure, you know, this is kind of a cool memento because, you know, even though I picked the series up already, you know, it's cool to have an autographed copy. The other thing I picked up just because it was new for the week was, and ironically, Kevin Smith did it, The Bionic Man number 7.
Ah,
because
I have been reading that book.
I enjoy it just because I'm waiting for the season one episodes to go down. I think we talked about it a while back. I picked up the Bionic Woman DVDs. Not sure if they would hold up over time because they had a couple of $6 million man crossovers with it. I still enjoyed it. You know, nothing worse than going back, picking up a childhood memory and discovering, oh, I must have been high.
Or just, you know, 10.
Yeah. So when those drop, and they will, I mean, the Bionic Woman came out at $40 and now you can pick them up like $15 at Target. Or our favorite, deep discount DVD. And if they want to give us something for the shout out, more than likely.
And they darn well better. Yep.
So
I don't think they're going to give us anything.
I know. And I don't think we'll get anything from Kevin Smith either. But, you know, I did talk to one guy. It turns out a lot of people at New Jersey Airport are comic book fans, and I've been having just geek heaven episode talks with them. And one guy was telling me he went down there, and a lot of people want to get down there. They just, you know, it's just like going to the Mega Mall for us back home. Yeah, I'm going to get there eventually. It's not going anywhere. But he said he went there with his girlfriend, and his girlfriend went, oh, my God, there's Kevin Smith. Because you never know when he's going to show up. And so she came up and meekly gave him a handshake. And from what I understand, Kevin sounds like a fairly approachable, normal guy. You know, if you want to geek at him, I think he'll accept it and just kind of, yeah, yeah. You know, if I ever met him, I would probably ask if he – I don't think he did it, but, you know, the story I talked about how Hot Comics helped out in Mallrats and things like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to just say, you know, I don't know if you did it or maybe Scott did it or who did it, but, you know, because I really get a kick out of that first scene in Mallrats. The last thing I left with is and maybe next episode we'll talk about it. They have An Askew View, the films of Kevin Smith from John Kenneth Muir. This guy basically just goes off the theory that before you can write a book about anybody, you have to have at least 5 movies, a TV show. And Kevin Smith finally hit that. This came out, though, before Jersey Girls and Clerks 2, so it was kind of, you know, sort of incomplete. But it was fun to read, nevertheless. You know, just it talks about, you know, the pre-setup, how the movie came to be, and a lot of interviews with Scott Mosier, which is cool, because a lot of times I find I'm more interested in what the producer's doing to get the movie off the ground than, you know, maybe what Kevin's doing by writing it. And, yeah, I mean, how would you ask a writer, where do your ideas come from? Well, you see that Cracker Jack box? Not in there. Or, you know, the directing might be cool. They even talked about Kevin's wife got a real respect for Kevin on Jay and Silent Bob by watching him do directing, because she knew he did it, and she always wondered, you know, he came home 20, 30 pounds heavier. But to actually watch him do it, she got a good respect, and now she understands why he has to leave for 12 hours and not be around while he's filming, you know, or directing, I guess. But it was interesting, the setup of the show, you know, and of course there's always, you know, dealing with Miramax or whoever. A synopsis of the thing, how it was received, how it played out, some of the actors involved, what they thought about it, and then some tidbits you might have missed. And then it goes to the next movie. So they cover all of his films, give a little sneak of Jersey Girl. It's hard to say, you know, I'm such a geek for this type of stuff. I mean, I was disappointed Matt Damian didn't talk. There was a little bad flit. Not a lot of Kevin Smith in there, although I think Kevin helped him with the behind the scenes, if not the direct quotes. And, you know, there were some actors, you're like, well, why didn't you talk to this person? Why didn't you talk to this person? Well, you know, this guy lives in New Jersey. He probably couldn't get a hold of half these people.
Yeah.
So it was a fun little book. And so those were the 3 things I bought. In addition to the stickers, you know, I went down there. My wife was giving me a warning. Don't blow a lot of money. What you got to remember.
Doesn't she give you that warning every day?
Pretty much. You know, I'm going to make my first trip to New York tomorrow. So, you know, that's already in place. And as we film it, it's St. Patty's Day. So if I go out drinking tonight, I may not go to New York, or I may end up in New York or a landfill in the Bronx. I don't know.
That's right. It is St. Patrick's Day when everybody claims to be Irish. Everybody becomes Irish on St. Patrick's Day.
Yep.
Except the Swiss. For some reason, they become Taiwanese.
It's just one of those things. I think it's because they're...
The crickets like that
one. Yeah, they don't come out for you that often. So, as I said, going to Jay's and Silent Bob. What I was mentioning is I think the reason why you don't see a lot of movie memorabilia is he had an auction where he auctioned off a lot of that stuff. I think Kevin Smith kept the stuff that meant something to him, and the rest of it, all the props, the whatnots, he auctioned off. There was an actual book there, an auction book that I thought of picking up too, but, you know, again, it was big, it was heavy, and I still had to take a 40-minute train ride home. So, and of course, whenever you're in a shop like Kevin Smith's, you got to look up, because if I hadn't looked up, I wouldn't have seen Blunt and Chronic and the Blunt deal.
I thought they had Allison, what's her name? Who was it played God?
Oh, Alanis Morissette.
Alanis Morissette. I thought they would have had Alanis Morissette up there.
They might have auctioned her off. Like I said, I got to go look for that auction book, you know. So,
well, as Joe mentioned a little earlier, I did an interview earlier this morning with one of our friends, Terrence Greep.
Who will be at the Minnesota Comic Book Convention.
That's right. And he's got a new book coming out. It's an electronic book. So even you people who don't go into comic shops can go to your Amazon and type in the name Dark Spectrum, and it shows up as the fourth choice there.
And after ours, hearing it on our podcast, it might go to number 6.
Well, maybe.
I hope it goes up. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I before the podcast, I asked Corey, you know, you're going to the con, will you get me a copy? And he's like, nope. Smartass. It's going to be a download. I'm like, oh, cool. So I can do that even while I'm here. And it should be available when?
I think you can order it right now. I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
Let's see. Dark Spectrum.
And while he's doing that,
if you there it is. It is available now.
Ooh, cool. Throw a link on our.
On December 30th.
Can you throw a link on the official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page on Facebook?
I might as well do that.
Sure. And I will put a link up.
There we go.
To my.
And if you're an Amazon Prime member, guess what?
What?
It's free.
Woohoo!
You can read it for free.
Nice.
It's $5.99.
Oh, that's
I read Terrence's short story last night. It was really good. And we talk about it. I will. And that's the introduction. You're getting to the interview. So here we go. Our first honest to God interview. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have our first guest here on the old radio show. His name is Terrence. He is a comic book writer, and he's here to promote something. And of course, if you want to promote something on this here show, you either got to give me $20 or let me ask you a bunch of questions. And he didn't come across with any cash.
I only have $19.95.
That's not enough. You can get a magic jack, but you can't buy me off.
Okay.
So how are you doing, Terrence?
Life is a cabaret, old chum.
And should I call you Terrence, Mr. Greep, that Scooby-Doo guy?
Whatever the is most comfortable.
Comics will talk to me.
Yeah, late for dinner. Terrence or Terry is just fine. That's what most people prefer. That sounds
okay.
Great to me.
Well, first, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience by letting them know what sort of comics you've written in the past?
I am probably best known in the comic book world, if I'm known at all, as a writer on Scooby-Doo. I wrote the first issue of that as published by DC Comics way back in 1997. And I've been involved with that book ever since. It's always been presented as kind of an anthology book, so there's always several writers on the book. Last fall, I contributed a story to 80. Let me think now. I got to get this right. Batman 80-page giant, 2011, number one. Which must be the single most inelegant title of any comic book of all time.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Giant-sized man thing.
Oh. I find that quite elegant, as a matter of fact. But it's fair point. Valid point. Point taken.
And you and I talked about that Batman story.
Yes.
Where, for those of you who haven't picked it up, just go down to your local comic shop or your online retailer or, you know, wherever they sell these
funny books.
Your funny books. And it's the story about the Riddler.
Correct.
And the thing I talked to you a little about it at the con, I was amazed no one had thought of that idea before. It's the Riddler running a game show.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of those ideas that's so elegant and so simple that when you read it, you go, well, of course.
You're very kind. Thank you. Yeah, it was an idea I've actually carried around with me for about 20 years, since I was a little kid, very young little kid. And I was inspired by a game show where the Riddler, we've already seen him in some famous stories try to just stop leaving riddles, and that didn't work out. But he's not an idiot, obviously, and so he just thinks, okay, I've got to change something. And what he decides, taking the lead from this game show, is rather than leaving riddles, he'll leave the solutions to riddles. He'll leave answers to riddles. And it turns out not to be as helpful as one might think. And hijinks ensue.
And again, I think when it came out, I recommended it. I'm recommending it again.
Well, thank you.
It's just a very fun little story. And you're not here to promote something you did a year ago. You're here to promote something brand new.
That's correct.
And you were very nice to share the story with me last night.
Uh-huh.
And I got called in for an overnight, so I'm running on fumes here.
Oh.
So why don't you do what I like to call the elevator pitch?
Okay.
You've heard that phrase before if you've ever looked for a job. Your story's part of an anthology.
Correct.
So why don't you just give us, you know, the name of the anthology and kind of the elevator pitch for the book?
Will you hum elevator music in the background while I do that?
No, no one wants to hear
me. You know what? Another valid point. You are correct. This was published by the recently relaunched Mansion Media, which is a Minneapolis-based company. It's one of four short stories. It's actually the precursor to a comic book called, I think you'll like this, Giant Size Spectrum. No, I didn't just pick that up to fit your motif from before. The name of this particular anthology is called Dark Spectrum, and it's four short stories, one of which is a reprint from of the old Black Bat character way back in the pulps. Stephen King, Keith Champagne, and myself are the other three writers contributing. And
Stephen King?
Stephen, I think I said Stephen King, and I meant Stephen Grant.
Oh. Oh, that,
wow. Who is the king of comics? That's how I how I got that screwed up.
Sounds a little bit.
Stephen Grant, of course, a legendary comic book writer, somebody probably, I think, best known for his work on Punisher in the 1980s, but he's done so much of other things since then. And I've read them all through, and they're a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun. My own contribution is about a super villain named the Illusioneer, who is as much a philosopher as he is a villain, has decided he hates masks, he hates deceit, despite his own motif, and sets about first unmasking the city's patron superhero. And when that doesn't work, he decides if he can't unmask the superhero in front of the city, he's going to unmask the city in front of the superhero. And things get kind of crazy from there.
And as I said, I read it last night. I was very impressed. I thought it's very hard to do superheroes in prose.
It is.
Because they come off, what comes off on a page visually, hard to describe in prose in a way that the reader doesn't go, well, no, that's BS.
Right. You've got to be careful. I mean, you can be very campy if you're not careful. And a lot of people sort of fall into that. And I think just think, particularly people who don't work with superheroes frequently, you know, can fall into that trap, and it just seems like sort of a lazy way to write superheroes in prose. But you're right, it's funny you should mention them, because I knew it was going to be a tricky little assignment, but when you sit and you know, how much detail do you include, how much do you not, how much do you assume, it's tricky.
Well, one of the questions I had as I read the story is, when you sit down to write for anything, you have to kind of put in your head the medium you'll be working in. What is the biggest difference between writing prose and writing comics?
in comics, for me personally, and I actually learned this years ago, and I usually work with shorter stories in comics, but I'm always thinking of, for want of a better term, a visual punchline, that there's going to be this great scene. Since we've mentioned the Riddler, that particular one, the whole story built to the scene where the Riddler has an unfortunate encounter with a bunch of video monitors, and there's a splash page that is fairly graphic, I suppose. And when structurally, I'm always building toward that when I do a comic book, this great big payoff. In prose, that's less of an issue. And in prose, you know, you have to do the art with your words. And so it's really more about setting a mood and being visual for the reader as opposed to describing things for the artist, which is what you do in a comic book script, of course.
Okay. One other thing about this story and then the Riddler story, both, they're both from the villain's point of view.
Yes.
And, well, you can get, I imagine with doing all the Scooby-Doo stuff, you might have gotten typecast.
Yes.
Is there a way that you could get typecast doing villain-themed stories? Is that a concern of yours, or is that something that you just want to explore more?
I'm not super concerned about it, but it has occurred to me. Part of that, there are a couple of things. I work as a professional wrestler on the independent scene, and usually the persona I present is a fairly villainous one. So I do have sort of an insight to dressing up in spandex and doing bad things. And in terms of just mechanics of a story, the villain is always the main character. The hero, this is particularly true of superheroes, you know, the villain is the first person to act. He does stuff, and the hero just responds to it. And so technically speaking, the villain is the main character. If you think of the movie The Dark Knight, for instance, you know, the Joker commits that robbery in the beginning, and that's what sets everything into play. The cops, the mob, and Batman are all kind of chasing after him after that point.
So, well, and there are certain superhero characters where the superhero doesn't change, and the villain is the one where everything's about. And I always use the example of the Punisher.
Oh, sure.
Where the Punisher, especially if you read Garth Ennis's, Punisher is just this force of nature, and the stories are about the villains.
Yeah.
Judge Dredd's another extreme example where Dredd doesn't change at all, and it's been 1,500 issues of 2000 AD.
Well, and you're exaggerating. It's 1497. Keep going. Go ahead.
But as you work through the story,
mm-hmm.
what is the difference? Because if if you're working on a movie or a TV script or something, you usually are tailoring it to the hero makes the discovery, which causes the third act to go into play, and then you've got your conclusion.
Correct.
If you're focusing on the villain, pretty much it always has to end with him losing.
Yeah, in comics, that's certainly true. The Joker actually had his own comic book series in the 1970s. I think it only lasted 9 issues. And that was an inviolate rule to keep it in accordance with the comic book... What the heck were they? The comic code authority, the villain. The title character had to lose every single issue, which also may have had something to do with why it didn't last super duper long.
Yeah, every issue of the Joker ended, well, I guess he's back in jail again.
Yeah. But, you don't really have to. At least the short story, I didn't have to. I'm sure DC would not let me let the Riddler win. I mean, I guess he always does briefly, but he always comes up, get him in the end. But yeah, that's true. If in horror and other genres, or suspense, I guess, as we're supposed to call it these days, sometimes the good guys do lose, and that's okay. You just have to. I mean, I think you've entered a compact with the reader. You just have to make it a satisfying end, one way or the other. But that doesn't necessarily mean the good guy wins.
Okay. You have another distinction, and if you'll let me, some people dislike you for it. Some people are disgusted by it. Some people find it really offensive. They find it really annoying. In Oklahoma, they actually have banned it outright. You are a professional wrestler.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about our friendship. Whew. Yes, I am a professional wrestler. That is true.
And could you talk a little about the similarities between professional wrestling and superhero comic books?
It's the obvious ones are, of course, spandex and muscled bound, larger than life characters.
Although some of the shows I go to, they're not exactly muscle bound.
Oh no, not speaking purely in theory. But engagement stories of good versus evil, relatively simple stories that are appealing for that very reason, which, I think anyone can see, and I've other people have made note of that previously. The fact that the media are so different, really, I mean, obviously, wrestling is live, all too live sometimes, and in print, I actually, another project I have coming up next month will be Spider Baby making his debut as a comic book character.
You should probably explain that you are Spider
Baby. I am Spider Baby. That's a great point. Thank you.
Yes,
that's
right. We've busted the secret right here.
It's a
on this here radio
secret
show.
Identity revealed. It's an Uncle Rat Bastard exclusive. But that particular one, I think about 12 pages of it is a wrestling match, and it is so much harder. You have so little room to put it on a printed page, to put that experience of a match on print, and so you have to be so much more economic with your presentation versus wrestling, where you can convey a lot of information pretty densely and pretty quickly. But the parallels, I think, outweigh that distinction. There's a lot more similarity than there is difference. And a lot of overlap in fandom, too. A lot of wrestlers I know are comic book fans, and I know a lot of comic book fans who follow wrestling as well.
One of the things that you told me about ages ago, and you never really got into a lot of detail, is that you put on your business card that you're a writer and a professional wrestler, and that actually got you some play with some editors. Some editors looked at your proposals or listened to you in pitch meetings because they were just intrigued by the whole idea.
Yeah, it was it's a pretty simple little networking trick, I suppose. You go to a comic book convention and you say, I write comic books. And anyone you say that to will say, well, hand me a dead cat. Let me swing it around my head three times. I'm going to hit 13 other people just standing right here who do the same thing. But when you say I'm a professional wrestler, that's a much rarer thing in a comic book convention. Not unique, but rarer. And I think a lot of times comic book professionals, comic book fans, are not particularly physical people, and so they're kind of intrigued by that, and they'll just, as you're intimating, just listen to you just to try to figure you out as much as anything. and I, you know, I'm not above milking anything to get a gig. I think some people have thought I have a little more credibility, being essentially a real life superhero or supervillain. They don't translate super well, but I have gotten the ear of editors who thought, oh, well, you wear spandex and, you know, do this stuff. And so it's just intriguing. It's never gotten me a job. No one's ever said, gee, you're a comic or you're a pro wrestler. You know, write this series. But
we want you to write a Crusher Hogan series.
I would totally do that. But
everything that happened to him after Spider-Man kicked his ass in Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah, they did revisit that character.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
Raven wrote that story.
That's right.
Supposedly.
That's right. Well, yeah, I'm sure he.
Because let's remember, he's smarter than all of us.
He's kind enough to remind us all the time. IQ 143. I remember that.
I'm a genius, you know.
I love Raven, by the way. I've always thought he presented a very effective, troubling villain. You know, that everything he said, it made you sympathetic to him to a point. And like some of the best Marvel villains, Doctor Doom, maybe the, I don't know if Mole Man qualifies as best, but you could always, to a point, go, gosh, you know, you're right, that did suck, and boy, life isn't fair to you. It doesn't justify hitting Tommy Dreamer over the head with a stop sign, or trying to rule the world, or whatever it is.
Or, yeah, tying Tommy Dreamer to a cross.
Or that was Sandman, I believe.
Oh, that's right, it was Sandman. He crucified.
But,
apologize.
Yeah, that one was... I still find that pretty shocking that no one, but I, you know, it was ECW in the 90s and they were a bunch of envelope pushers and I doubt if it even occurred to him. I believe Raven is Jewish besides, so maybe he wasn't aware of the sensitivity of that image with some people, my mother included.
No. Well, it was pretty sensitive to Kurt Angle because he was at that show, if rumors are correct. And they went backstage, and they were trying to get him to work for the company.
I've seen him interviewed about that. Yeah, he what he claims now is, you know, he said he was being paid to be there. He said, I want all of my money, but I don't want you to use my likeness on anything. You know, if you do, I will sue you. He was very pointed about it. At least he claimed to be years later, and I believe it. You know, even if you don't find it offensive personally, you know, you could see where it would kind of limit your options afterwards.
Although, when Vince Russo stole the angle and had The Undertaker strap Stone Cold Steve Austin to a very similar object.
Yeah.
No, it was Stephanie, wasn't it?
No, you're right. It was Stone Cold.
It was Stone Cold. They didn't get quite so much outrage that, well, it's just the Undertaker's symbol.
Yeah.
That happens to look like a cross.
Yeah, I think there was some religious group complained with just the crucifixion motif, I believe, but they're always complaining. And I don't think Vince McMahon particularly cared, you know. I don't think he'd want to be boycotted or anything like that, but he strikes me as being very much the school. Any publicity is good publicity.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Yeah, God bless them.
Now, I know that wrestlers have tons of stories. Do you have any really good wrestling stories? I know we could go for hours. You pick one.
I'll tell you my Baron story, since this just happened this past Saturday and you were there. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but I thought this was kind of funny. Okay, so I grew up as a kid just adoring Baron Von Raschke, and he was at a show that I was actually wrestling on just recently. he was there just to sign autographs and tell stories. So per my own entrance, I come through the curtain, people react, and I've got this sort of kind of a cruiserweight version of Jesse Ventura with a gothic twist, I suppose you could say. And I go about halfway around the ring, then climb up to the second rope. I have a live, dead rose in my hand that is not a plastic rose. I do this very dramatic, stylized sort of sniffing of the rose, throw my head back, spit a bunch of water into the air. People react. I'll get into the ring, hold up the rose, people will cheer, and then somebody in the audience will catch my fancy for whatever reason. I turn my back to that person, cover my eyes, and then hoist the single rose over my shoulder, not unlike a newly minted bride, and invariably I miss whoever I was aiming at because I'm just a dreadfully poor, non-Annie Oakley kind of rose tosser, as it turns out. So at this particular show, I go through all of that. I mean, up to the part where I'm in the ring, I hold up the rose, the place goes crazy. Everyone wants me to throw this little $2 rose to them. And that works, incidentally, as a good guy or a bad guy. I was a good guy at this particular promotion, but the ritual is pretty much the same. And then once it's done, they'll start booing me if I'm a villain. So I paused and thought about it for a second and then took two steps back to the corner I just came through. And beyond that, there sat Baron von Raschke with four photos of himself at a wooden table with his wife next to him. And I cast the rose over my shoulder toward the Baron. And I did something I don't normally do. I turned around to look, see where it landed, how it landed. Well, Baron is looking down, and this is, of course, the legendary Clawmaster of the AWA, Titan of a generation ago. He has both of his claws on the table, and he's looking down at the table, and which doesn't speak well to my entrance. He didn't seem the slightest bit interested. And directly, precisely, mathematically, perfectly, the rose lands between those two claws. And if it were a comic book, I suppose it'd be like a beat panel or two of him just looking down, and then sort of his nose sort of gravitates toward it like, what the heck is this? And then his head popped up, and he looked at me, and he gave me this look like, did you put that there? And the crowd just starts cheering and kind of laughing. And even his wife, right next to him, sort of had her hands over her mouth like she was laughing but trying to cover it up. And I just realized this nightmare in this scenario, or this absolute hero of mine, I just made look like kind of a silly guy. So I started clapping my hands and looking over the Baron like, yeah, we worked that out beforehand, didn't we, Baron? That was pretty good. And then started taking off my ring gear, which is also part of my routine, and tried to take the flies off of the Baron, as it were. And then, as you might remember, I did a quick promo, got back in the ring, and just as about to tie up, I kind of looked over at the Baron and winked at him in a sly sort of way, not a flirty sort of way. And he kind of looked at me, and he nodded, and I was like, oh, good. So he got it. We're cool. Everything's fine. Now let's go get beat up. All right. It felt like the worst kind of anti-karma in the world, you know, trying to impress. All I wanted to do is have the Baron watch my stuff and like it. Instead, I ended up making him, I swear, if Scotty in the transporter room had beamed it down directly between his hands, I don't think he could have found it more baffling. Doodah, the end.
Well, you've been a part of the local convention scene here for a while.
I have.
Gosh, I'm trying to think. I know you started attending back when we were at the Thunderbird.
Yep.
And was wondering, see, Joe and I talk about the convention from our point of view, him as a retailer and working on the con and me working on the con. And we rarely get a good idea of how the guests feel and how the people who attend feel, because we're just kind of in a different mindset the whole time. So I was wondering if you had any good stories from your end about the convention.
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, we're talking about the fairly soon to be arriving Spring Con.
You don't need to do a big pitch thing. Joe just...
Oh, I heard... I
can't stop talking about the darn thing.
I listened to the last show. So, yes, you're right.
I'm sorry.
No, I'll never get those minutes back, ever. So, yes, of course, he's a very good promoter of that, and he should be. It really is, I'm not just blowing smoke. My favorite convention, the talent is absolutely spoiled rotten. It's just wonderful, and there's, despite the fact that there is a real attempt to get national talent, I also feel as a local guy that we get some extra support as well. In terms of stories, I've got, this actually happened, the spring one, back when it was MicroCon, back when it was that one community center, maybe.
Oh, yeah, the Maplewood Community Center.
That's it. I think it was the last time it was there. Not that any of that matters. So this very awkward woman comes up to me with her very awkward prepubescent boy, maybe 8 years old or something like that. And, of course, we are generously afforded a table for free to sell our wares. So I have a bunch of Scooby-Doo issues written by me in front of me on the table. And I have encountered fairly commonly that people who want to get something for a little kid see the Scooby stuff and they go, oh, thank goodness. And rather than Blood Claw or, you know, some of the dark and dreary.
You know, I can actually say this without Joe throwing up or Deathmate.
Or, yeah, right. Here's something that's a little more family friendly and Scooby.
And legible.
Go ahead.
And legible.
And legible. And switchable. That one almost went by me. It's like the world's worst hockey goal. I reached back and got that one. Legible, yes. And so, you know, Scooby's well known. He's not thought of as a comic book character, but he's well known. So I see a lot of people come to my table with a sense of great relief that has nothing at all to do with me, but just the character himself. Oh, good. Something I can get my kid. So awkward mom and awkward kid come over, and I have maybe six different issues there, and they just take forever and ever and ever, and they're, well, maybe we should pick this one, and maybe we should pick that one. And I said, honestly, I pointed to one. I remember it was Scooby-Doo number 49. I said, this is my favorite issue. This is my favorite issue that I've ever contributed to. And awkward mom looks at me and gets this kind of sour look on her face. And like if I just farted in Japanese or something, where she's kind of confused and offended at the same time. And then she and the son confer some more and back and forth. And I can't really do this justice, but eventually, very eventually, she gets the one I recommended after testing like about six of them and paging through them, and the kid is coughing all over everything. So she pays me $2, takes a comic book, and after she takes maybe three steps, Terry Beatty happened to be sitting right next to me, inker extraordinary, wonderful artist who's now based in Kansas City, but was
and drawing the Phantom,
and oh, which I'm insanely jealous of. And I looked at Terry Beatty and I said, that is the hardest $2 I ever earned in my life. And he went, whoa! With a deep voice of his. And then the awkward mom and the awkward kid both looked back, and I just waved, yeah, we weren't just talking about you like good Minnesotans. Yeah. Oh, I'll offer one other one, if I may. Joel Thingvall would not forgive me if I forgot this one. Back when he was putting on those much smaller shows, I think every other month, and they were just a tiny little thing in some hotel somewhere. This may have been like 1998. And he witnessed this. I did not. But I signed some comics. This is when I was basically the main writer on Scooby and very, very flush with hope and inspiration about making a big name for myself in comics. And so I meet this boy and his dad, sign a comic, make some nice small talk, they go away, and then as they leave through the door, Joel Thingvall happens to be at the door, the kid says, "Hey, Dad, if you think that guy dies, will this comic be worth a little more?" So, and of course, Joel presents it to me like if I'm remembering this right, you know, like, "Well, I think I have to kill you." I said, "No, really? Why is that, Joel?" And then he told me the story, and I said, "Ah, take your best shot, Joel." So those are stories, not so much about comics, but people.
Well, that's the best thing about comic conventions to me. It's reading comics is such a solitary thing, mm-hmm. that it's hard to build community around something that's solitary.
Yeah.
And conventions are fun, not just because they've got all kinds of cool stuff and Joe talks about the cool stuff and this and that. For me, it's more, it's almost a sense of you've come home to your tribe. These are my people.
Yeah.
And no matter how awkward I feel, these people accept me in my awkwardness.
Yes. They share it, in fact.
Yes.
Yeah, that, I agree. It's, I just couldn't say it any better than that. I've noticed that too, that, you know, comics you usually partake of by yourself. I've heard of comic reading parties, and I always think, oh, that kind of defeats the purpose for me. I like being alone. But then you do like getting together and just talking about what's going on.
Yeah, but the problem is if you're all reading comics, you're all reading different ones, and some idiot's going to spoil it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I can't believe that Reed Richards got hit in the head by the thing. Damn it, I haven't read that yet.
Spoiler. Yep. You got to be careful that. So, yeah, you better get caught up before you go to those comic book conventions.
Well, if you've heard the show, one of the things we do on the show is geeking and freaking.
Yep.
It's new, and I really like it. It's a fun chance to talk about what gets us excited about comics and what gets us irritated.
Okay.
Because let's be honest, we're fans, and fans are passionate, and there are things we love and things we don't love. So I'm going to ask you, what you geeking on, Terrence?
I'm in love with Miles Morales, the Ultimate Spider-Man. I think... I didn't like the send-off they gave Peter Parker. I didn't like the fact that they gave Peter Parker the send-off. If I'm honest, I was kind of looking at his... the only reason I was checking him out was his costume. I was looking for new designs for my own wrestling wear, and obviously you don't want to be too derivative, or Marvel lawyers are going to come after you like the sharks that they are. But
like they came after Arachnaman.
W. And I'm sure he was really hurting the franchise. Arachnaman. Who was that? Was that Brad Armstrong?
Yes, it was.
Oh, goodness gracious. I hope they paid him like 10% extra for lost dignity. But
oh, come on. He went on to be, God, what was his name at the end of WCW when he had the stoner gimmick?
Oh.
Was it Flashback or...
Let's say that. I don't remember. I remember
comes
the character.
Out in a tie-dye t-shirt and acts like Matthew McConaughey.
Oh. Hang on. That's so not cool. And I really do... the other geeking thing is the Batman books, which, you know, could be me whoring myself out, but it really isn't. I got reacquainted with him after some time away because of that, the Riddler story we keep talking about, that I really fell in love with that version of the question, which I didn't expect to do. I love the Batwoman character. And I was surprised how much I liked Dick Grayson as Batman. I kind of wish they would have left him in that role. I thought that was really cool in a geeky kind of way.
Well, and let's flip the coin. What you freaking about? What irritates you? What are you worried about? What are you scared about? What are you freaking about?
It's a fairly dated freak, but I'm still kind of mystified by DC's reboot last fall, and I'm delighted, as somebody who writes for them pretty frequently, that it was as successful as it was. But I'm really kind of, I'm shocked that people seem to be buying into it so much. Like it won't, all of this continuity won't be completely rewritten 5 years from now. Like somehow this is the one that really counts. And I just think, really? are you buying that? And if you enjoy it, just for the sake of enjoying it, that's fine. In terms of freelance, being a freelancer, I was kind of saddened. I had some my eyes on characters like Hawk and Dove, and I was sorry to see them just do what they did. I didn't
go to Liefeld.
Yeah, I just didn't like the series. I didn't like that art. I didn't like any of it. And I just thought, oh God, you guys, you should have given it to me. My own ulterior motive notwithstanding, honestly, I had some really cool stuff. And now it's like those characters will be poisonous, I think, for 5 years, at least in terms of sales. Other than that, I'm not too unhappy with comics.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I can't thank you enough for all the time.
Yep. Thanks, Chucker. If I may, I hope everyone will check out Dark Spectrum. It's Amazon.com. Just put Dark Spectrum into the search engine. If your experience is like mine, it will actually be the fourth item that comes up, but it's very distinct in that my name is Grant, Stephen Grant, and Terrence Grieper there, and I hope people will give it a try.
And do you have your own website? Because you're really not anything if you don't have a website.
I don't. I let mine expire just because I hadn't updated it. If people want to get in touch with me the most effective way, and I guess I'm not anything is what you're saying, but be Facebook.
Well, it's one of the jokes we've had on the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey.
How far back does that go? I don't remember that one. I've only seen
Whenever we do the ad for DreamHost.com.
Facebook.com/TheSpiderBaby. People can follow me there, my doings in both wrestling and writing. All things I do that begin with the letters WR.
There you go.
I keep people abreast Facebook.
And you wrestle about once a month over in St. Paul.
Yeah, there's
on top of all the other ones.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Kind of your regular home now, I take it.
That's correct. Yeah, it's that's the second Saturday of every month. The 287 Maria Avenue in St. Paul is it's called the Eagles Club. But yeah, I wrestle a lot, but that is a regular one and one I enjoy a lot. They have actual storylines there, so that's kind of cool.
And hopefully they'll get a sound system so we can tell what the stories are.
Well, what we're doing there is the hypothetical we're presenting is, what if Peppermint Patty's teacher were a professional wrestler? So we just get on the mic. Since you mentioned it, you were at the last show, you know, I did get on mic, which I'm very careful about not doing it every single show, even though I think I'm pretty good at it. If it stops being special, you know, it's just, oh, here goes Spider Baby ranting for 5 minutes again. Even if it's good.
Like the start of every episode of Raw.
Like that. Exactly like that. Well spotted. And, you know, you try to get on the mic. You're trying to talk crap. There was an actual stipulation attached to this match. So I wanted to remind everybody what that was. And you're just building up a nice little groove. And just as you're about to get to the, all of a sudden the starts out on you. And it's just the most exasperating thing. Because it doesn't really add to your cred as a badass when every other word suddenly just disappears. The crescendo just isn't there. It's like half an orgasm, you know? Like, what's the point of that?
And on that note, I think we'll end.
Yeah, that's a good place to end it.
Well, thanks so much for letting me call you at this early time in the morning.
I'm very grateful for your interest. Thank you for reaching out. I appreciate it sincerely.
And Joe won't get to hear it until the podcast is all done.
I know. I might not get to hear it because I got to decide what do I want to download for 9 hours. The next Walking Dead or number Crazy Comics and Stories number 64.
Well, this is a long episode, so we're going to jump right into Freaking and Geeking, or Geeking and Freaking. I haven't decided which way to do it yet. And it's brought to you by BartCop.com. BartCop.com, your political humor website for those of us on the left end of the spectrum. It goes into politics. It goes into cartoons. It goes into poker. It goes into tequila. And there's a link to all kinds of safe for work. Pictures of beautiful women. I actually took him to task that he has a section on Paris Hilton and no section on Christina Hendricks.
Hmm.
And I have yet to hear back from him, so maybe he's a little shocked and offended that I don't like Paris Hilton.
I would find it hard to believe he'd be shocked and offended by anything that didn't come out of the right wing.
And here's his ad.
Hi, my name's Bart, and I got a little radio show over at BartCop.com that we call it the Tequila Treehouse. And on the radio show, we talk about a lot of things. You know, we talk about sports, and we talk about sex, and we talk about TV, and we talk about movies. But really, we're not talking about those things. We're usually talking about the politics of the sports and the sex and the TV and the movies and that. So if you go to BartCop.com, you might get to hear a sample. Actually, the radio show is for the subscribers, but now and then we open it up to the general masses, or we play some snippets on there trying to tease you into subscribing. But that's over at BartCop.com, the Tequila Treehouse. Try it. You might like it.
So, Joe, geeking and freaking. You talked a little about what you're geeking on, and that's Walking Dead.
Which is usually what I am the following day when I can't. You know, and I mentioned before I read that book on the films of Kevin Smith. They are all available on Netflix, so I can watch the films of Kevin Smith on Netflix.
Even his latest one, Red State, is available on there.
And they also talk a little bit. I don't know if he's got them. I know the Clerks TV show is on there. And he talks a little bit about some of the things. Apparently, Kevin's very generous because he had a bunch of his friends that wanted, you know, tried their hand in filmmaking. And there are a number of movies, like called Vulgar is one of them. Now You Know, Drawing Flies, A Better Place. These are all movies that Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier, maybe Scott, they emerged either directly or indirectly from Kevin Smith and View Askew Productions. That's where he went as an executive producer. I think Scott did as well. And they got these films out. Now I got a whole list of things to add that, you know, I'm going to either look for or download. And now I understand, too, while some of these were at the shop, because you could buy the DVDs right there, as if anybody, you know, buys DVDs.
I still buy DVDs.
Yeah, where the dinosaurs left?
There's one thing I am geeking on that I'm giddy about, that I'm happy about, that I don't think I could be more excited.
You sound excited.
The Infernal Man Thing is a miniseries coming out later this year. It is a script written by the late Steve Gerber.
Ooh, now you got my attention. Now,
when he did the original Man-Thing series, which I highly, highly recommend. It's one of those things from the 70s. There are a few parts of it that are a little ham-handed, but it's aged very well.
Unlike us.
You can pick up pretty much everything Gerber did on Man-Thing in the two-volume Essential Man-Thing. But one of the stories, I think it's Man-Thing number 12, was Night of the Living Dead Man, which is widely considered one of his best stories. He was unhappy with the ending. He felt he had to rush it, so he entered into a contract with Marvel to do a Man-Thing graphic novel back in, I think it was like 83 or 84, right before Void Indigo came out. And he completed the script, and it was given to an artist, and it promptly vanished from Marvel's coming attraction stuff. I still remember in 1991, they were saying the Man-Thing graphic novel will be coming out later this year. And hopefully the miniseries or the trade that collects it will tell the whole story behind it, because it's a little murky, but it is a sequel to that story where Gerber was able to go back, do a sequel to the story, give it the ending he wanted. So it's a lost Steve Gerber Man-Thing story that will get printed, and I cannot wait. I may not be able to pick it up, may not be able to wait for the trade. I may have to pick it up as individual issues, even though Marvel's individual issues, $3.99 each for a miniseries. That's a little pricey.
Yeah.
So, Joe, anything else you're geeking on? Even though we spent the first, 20 minutes of the episode.
No, I think I've rubbed up my geek this week. I've rubbed out my geek this week. I'm good.
Okay. And freaking, what are you freaking about?
Did I mention I'm going to miss the Comic-Con back home?
Yes.
Okay, that's it.
Quite a few times.
Yeah, that's all I got. The other thing, too, is as I visit all these different comic stores, I'm always looking for things that are unique there that I would probably buy. I also got to remember, anything I buy, I got to figure out how the hell to get home. So, a lot of times I go, oh, man, look at it. That's so cool. Legion of Superheroes complete figure set for $250. Oh, that's neat. I can't fit that in my luggage. Okay, forget it.
The thing I'm freaking about, Marvel's solicitations leaked a little early. They're coming out on Monday after WonderCon. And there's all kinds of WonderCon news. They've got all kinds of announcements. But the solicitations leaked, and I noticed something, and maybe it happened a while back, and I didn't know, but they're doing another Atlas Age Masterwork, which, boy, I got to get me a full-time job that's my field.
There's three things you can do. You can, pick out some of those comics that you've got the graphic novel for and sell them on eBay. You could take out you must have first prints of Walking Dead. Check on eBay. Those are going for silly, silly money. Number two, you can sell off body parts and organs or blood. Number three, you could dig up Davy Jones' corpse and hold it as ransom.
I think they tried that with Charlie Chaplin back in the 70s, and those guys are still in jail.
Oh, God. Pick.
But the final volume of Tales to Astonish, the masterwork Tales to Astonish, $74.99. Now, the regular Marvel Masterworks, I think, are still either $49.99 or $59.99. And I remember when they upped the Atlas and Timely, that's the stuff from the 40s and 50s, they upped those to $64.99. It was, oh, crap, they're more expensive, but... they've got to do restoration. There's all this stuff. There aren't as many people buy them. Okay, I guess I'll pay it. Now, $75 for those hardcovers.
And the sad thing is, it's still a cheaper deal than trying to find the originals, even if you could find them.
Well, the Atlas books, if you're looking, are fairly easy to find on eBay.
And you just, want a reader copy. You're not looking to absolute mint,
No. because as you know, I'm on that Timely Atlas discussion list. I've been on it for almost, God, now I feel really old, almost 20 years now.
Go with it.
And a lot of the people on there, they've got their list, and the stuff they're missing are either the kids' books or the romance books. Because the kids' books, you know, they got read to death. The romance books, the people who collect comics didn't keep them, and the people who bought them didn't collect. But all of the monster books are fairly easy to find. The superhero books are very easy to find. And the war books, the War and the Western, they're a little harder. But once you get to the stuff like the Kirby books, those are, they're out there because there were even Kirby collectors back in the 50s. But $75. Ugh. Killing me, Marvel.
Maybe you could do a link in to help, you know, under the guise of the podcast, just trying to, you know, raise money for things. Of course, you still got that 20 in your pocket, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Well, there you go. Now you
and most of the money I raise goes to, you know, my crack and hookers.
Well, you know, I told you, you got to give up that pie addiction.
This is one of our longer episodes because we've gone almost, we've gone almost an hour and the interview with Terrence was almost 45 minutes.
And someday maybe we'll post the entire 2-hour unedited version if anybody cares. But we'll see.
Well, there's a lot of it we can't because a lot of it's kind of personal.
Well, then we can hold it. And when Terrence finally makes the big time, because all you are going to rush out and buy that book. What was it again? Amazon.com, the name of it?
Dark Spectrum. And if you go to our... you go to the official Crazy Comics and Stories comics, although you've got a Comics and Stuff podcast page.
Yeah.
There's a link right there.
Dumb old Facebook won't let me change it. Well, before we go, in honor of St. Pat's Day, I have to say, roses are cars, violets are buckets. This poem makes no sense. Boobs.
And I'd like to say, same as every week, that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.